Willkommen zum E-Com Secrets Podcast. Hier erfährst du, wie du mit deinem Online-Shop endlich deine Umsatzziele erreichst, ohne dabei abhängig zu sein von Amazon oder Online-Marketing-Agenturen. Wir zeigen dir, wie du deinen aktuellen Status quo durchbrichst und dabei nicht nur nachhaltig, sondern auch direkt in die Skalierung kommst. Und hier ist dein Host, Daniel Bittmann.
Willkommen zu dieser neuen Episode hier im E-Com Secrets Podcast und heute geht es wieder um ein Interview. Ich habe den lieben Vasili Brandt aus Dänemark hier eingeladen in den Podcast. Ich habe ihn kennengelernt bei einer Mastermind dieses Jahr und habe mir gedacht, diesen Typen muss ich hier an Bord haben. Daher gesagt, getan, eingeladen. Wir sprechen über die Zukunft von E-Commerce und digitalem Marketing. Seine eigenen Firmen werden dieses Jahr über 40 Millionen Euro in Revenue generieren. Super spannend. Wir werden über diverse Themen wie VR, Facebook Ads, Social Media, Influencer und so weiter sprechen. Kleiner Disclaimer an der Stelle. Ich habe im Nachhinein gemerkt, dass die Mikrofonqualität auf meiner Seite nicht ganz so optimal war. Deswegen sorry dafür. Ich freue mich auf jeden Fall auf diese Podcast-Episode. Und jetzt geht's los. In Englisch. Alright, Vasili, nice to have you on board. How are you today?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for inviting me, Daniel. It's a pleasure.
So to give the listeners a little bit of context, we have met this year in Spain on Ibiza. We went on a little boat trip and we had a pretty nice conversation and somehow it clicked. So we had the great idea to just record a podcast episode for all the listeners because Vasili has a lot of stuff to talk about and really valuable stuff. So before we deep dive into all the topics, maybe you can talk a little bit about yourself. What I was researching you, and I found big topics. Like, I mean, you were the head of growth at the Hut Group. It's a really, really big company. I think you have the company has over 7,000 employees, 9 figures in yearly revenue. So really big numbers. But now you are actually your own business owner. You have the Blazer Capital company with, I don't know, like 100 employees or something, if I correctly remember. You are co-founder of Nordgreen. It's a Danish design watch brand. Forbes 30 under 30. So a lot of big topics, but maybe you can talk about it with your words.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Daniel. I mean, you already told most of it, so I can, of course, go one step deeper. But yeah, my name is Vasili Brandt, and I'm the co-founder of Blazer Capital and also Nordgreen, which is the first company that we built within Blazer Capital. Before that, I lived abroad for a couple of years, also in Germany, lived in Berlin. So German language skills, you know, there's a little bit there. But before I moved back to Denmark to start this, I worked at the Hut Group in the UK. And actually, when I started over there back in 2015, we were less than 1,000 in the headquarters. So back then, you know, it was definitely also getting quite big, but it was still very much under the radar. A lot of people didn't really know about it, and now they just made one of the biggest IPOs in the UK. So it's been a crazy journey for them. So yeah, I mean, if we start there, I was head of growth, taking care of the internationalization of some of their health brands, helped scale some of the brands within them. Yeah, in East Asia, Southeast Asia, Middle East, South America, and other markets. And I was also responsible for some of the alternative growth strategies in the company. So coming up with new ideas that goes beyond the usual marketing palette that most people usually talk about or marketeers talk about. In 2017, I decided to start my own company, something that I've had on my radar for many years. So quick context, Blazer Capital is an incubator that builds consumer brands online, primarily within accessories, health, and beauty. And Nordgreen, which is the watch company that we launched in the very beginning, was the one that myself and one of the other partners, Pescar, focused on from day zero, which then went live in April 2018. So that's when we really went live with the concept.
Nice. And you told me 8-figure revenue
this year. I think like 40 million you mentioned, fast growing. So you're super successful with what you're doing, right? It's obvious.
It's been a fun journey. This year we expected around the 40 million, yeah, across all the brands.
Amazing. And all right, so regarding this topic today, since you have a lot of insights in different verticals and different brands in Blazer Capital, but also what you did before and your own brands as well, you have a pretty big overview of the e-commerce universe and also the trends. I saw you are on conferences and events and debates and so on. So you are someone who is looking into the future, who sees things, and I bet you're trying to predict things. So I'm super curious what you see for the next years. I mean, a lot of people here in the podcast who are listening, they are doing Facebook ads, and you have like iOS 14, iOS 15, and so on. But when you step back and see everything on a macro topic, what would you say? What are the biggest trends for the next years, for example?
I mean, there's a lot of trends, I think, within the online marketing and e-commerce in general. What we can see very recently, at least, which I think everyone is very much aware of within the scene, is the increased prices in marketing. So the pandemic has really fueled kind of companies going online, which has, of course, increased the prices of advertising, standard supply and demand. But also quite radically, especially on social media and also Google. We've seen some of our brands having 100% increases in CPCs on a year-on-year basis, which is extreme. Of course, not everyone is experiencing that. Some are seeing also higher, but some also less. But in general, there's a very big increase that has happened in the past year. And this is also gone beyond paid social and paid search. You also see it with influencers, as an example, and getting more expensive because there's just a bigger demand for them. Content production becomes for many also more expensive. I think one of the biggest trends from now and going forward will really become that brand should be more kind of full spectrum, really go beyond just a couple of channels, but try to explore everything. So not everything, but everything that makes sense for a brand, right? So if you are very much a social company, then of course social goes beyond Facebook. TikTok is also the most actively used platform now, social media platform, right? So a huge opportunity, still quite low CPCs and CPMs for many. Pinterest is an option. If you have a brand that can kind of justify it, you can also go on Twitch. You know, there's a lot of opportunities within the social universe you can explore. So I think that's of course something we're going to see more of. So companies trying out these things. Then I think in general, companies will just have to go beyond that. So affiliate marketing will become much more important. Just content, blogs, magazines, online primarily, of course, but for e-commerce companies, but offline, I think we'll also get an increase again in many countries. I'm negotiating offline deals for Black Friday, which is something I usually definitely don't do. But because of the prices we see this year, it's something that I think is interesting to test. SEO, trying to push organic, email marketing, more PR, create ambassadorships, collabs, partnerships. There's a lot of avenues that can be explored. And I think one of the biggest trends now is that we'll see a lot of companies try out much more than they've done in the past. Mm-hmm. Another thing that we have definitely experienced is that because of the increased CPCs and CPMs, it's really hard to build a company that doesn't have repeat purchase. So having online businesses that have to kind of be profitable on every new customer that they generate is becoming really hard. Our biggest watch company, Norgreen, is growing very, very well. But one of the bigger challenges is repeatability. In the watch industry, an average customer buys a watch every 6-7 years or so. I think it's 1 billion units sold every year. You just don't get that repeatability, which means you have to make money all the time every time that you make a new customer. So I think that's really becoming harder compared to if you just go 5 years back. Internationalization, will become important. I mean, there's a lot of things here.
Yeah, actually, let me just jump into this topic because you just mentioned like returning customers. And I think this is so, so important because you need some sort of word of mouth marketing in your marketing mix, quote unquote. So I think those changes will also force brands into focusing more on the audience itself, the customer, and making even better products. I think like those brands with like not so good products, bad quality and so on, they will have it pretty hard in the future and also right now already with the Facebook ads and so on. But what you said is just right, like focusing also on the growing customer base and then that they purchase again and again and again. I think it's super important. Then one other thing, when I remember correctly, we talked about like the influencer marketing topic. You had like really interesting launching strategies and building brands on the back of influencers. Maybe you can share one or two thoughts about this topic.
Yeah, this is obviously, I think this is also a very important strategy that should be considered based on the landscape we see online now and doing big influencer collabs, you know, I wouldn't even call it influencer marketing. It's more like advanced ambassadorships, right? Where you really co-create a product or even a brand with a celebrity. We have done that in Blazer. Where we're involved in two celebrity cases at the moment, one called Chamberlain Coffee and one called Atom and Matter. And what you can just see with influencers cases is that you have a megaphone through the influencer, right? Mm-hmm. So if you make a company together with an influencer, then every time that person shares content, you know, it's you don't pay for it in the same way as if it's a standard influencer deal that's just done through a brand. Of course, you need to do it in a very motivating way. I think the best way to do it is to co-create a company with influencer, have ownership as well. And there's something that we're exploring now. And some cases, we see a lot of cases that are really, really successful in the US. Kylie Cosmetics is a very good example. You have the Honest Cup company with Jessica Alba. You know, there's a lot of brands, Kanye, Yeezy, so, and these all, you know, $1 billion companies, 100 million, $1 billion companies. So you see a lot of success cases within this field. Of course, there are also a lot of companies, people building brands with small influencers, and they have a higher tendency to not become extremely successful, but can still create a sustainable business. But it is a way to really overcome that barrier of high costs when it comes to online marketing. And as you said yourself, you know, you can't just launch a brand nowadays with a bad product and just sell it online through cheap Facebook marketing or very cheap influencer marketing. You know, that was back in 2012-13. But when you build a brand with a famous celebrity on influencer, then that person is really the brand, right? So that's going to give you a head start. And that whole brand building process is not as cumbersome and as hard as if you start from the very scratch. You still need to make sure that, of course, the brand is desirable and it looks great and the product is amazing and the journey is exactly as you would expect yourself as a customer. But the fact that there's another person, famous person who's a part of it, just gives you that head start that you otherwise don't have.
Totally agree. And you even use their audiences and everything. Yeah, it's a great strategy. I bet it's not so easy to get someone for such a deal, but I assume if you have a proper track record, what you did with other brands, then they're more than happy to make a nice deal with you. Okay, I'm going to switch the topics because a lot of brands, they want to, of course, they want to scale and so on. And internationalization is a big topic. And I remember in our conversation, I think we were in the bus driving to a party or something, you mentioned you are very, very analytical with, in which countries we are going to enter. And I was really, really surprised when you mentioned, okay, you started this Danish design watch brand, and then I think you launched in Asia somewhere. Like, what is the process there, or how can brands now in the next months and years make those international scaling? Like, how to decide which country and so on?
That's a good question. I think internationalization will become much more important going forward, and much more, it's also much more accessible. Global logistics and operations have really allowed companies nowadays to be able to start in one country but be global from day one, because you can get products from A to B within a very short time period. So how to choose where to go? I mean, the beginning, when you start a company, you don't have any data. So it's really based on, I mean, you don't have your own data. You can use, you know, market reports and things like that from Euromonitor or Mintel or the like to get an understanding. And then you need to base a decision on those numbers. And then, you know, further qualitative analyses you might make. As an example, when we launched NotGreen, which is a Danish design watch company, we knew that Danish design is definitely desirable in some parts of Asia, in particular China, Japan, South Korea. And already there's a hypothesis that, you know, there can definitely be some sort of fit here, right? Product market fit. So you know that so you can base it on these kind of things, and then base it on numbers. You know, China is a very, very big watch market, has a very big watch market, Japan as well. We're talking, you know, double digit billions of, as far as I'm aware, in each of them. So you have a big market, you have a good product market fit. Online is big in both markets. You know, in Japan, I think the average amount of smartphones per person is like 1.4 or something. So some people even have two. And the e-commerce penetration rate is extremely high compared to many other countries worldwide, also in Europe. And so, you know, you can base your decision based on these variables and then try it out, then see how it goes. Then, of course, once you go live, you'll get much more data, much more information that you can process to use to then understand or decide what you want to do next. That's usually how we do it. With NotGreen, I think we went one step too extreme in the beginning, which is not necessarily something one should do. We launched 14 different websites in 14 different countries where we had a hypothesis that there would be a good chance of success. But to do that just requires a lot of work, right? Because every time you launch a new market, especially in an exotic market like in East Asia and Middle East, South America, exotic compared to Western Europe, you just need to localize it in so many different ways that just, you know, it requires a lot of knowledge. It can become expensive from a human resource perspective, and just from also, you know, tech perspective, also marketing wise. And so, you know, it has to be a balance between how broad do you go and where do you go.
And I'm curious, from those 14 markets, how many worked in the beginning already?
So I think it was around 5 we cut off after 6 months or so. So we did, you know, test all the markets through localized e-commerce websites, through localized marketing, to then see where do we have a return that justifies the page to stay alive, right? And the markets where we didn't have that return, or at least didn't have the right signals, we turned it off. Whether that was the right thing to do, I mean, we can see that some of the market we actually turned off are now getting traction on our global website. So people are coming to our .com site and converting. So whether shutting it off back then was the right thing, you know, it's hard to say, but at least at that point in time, the return on the local infrastructure was not as high as we expected.
Okay. And I assume you were running like Facebook ads, and you compared the CTRs, the CPCs, the profitability, and then took a decision. Okay, those countries work, those countries are not working right now. This is like the structure you did, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So we had we tried to run full spectrum from the beginning. So it's both, you know, Facebook, Instagram, paid search, shopping, display, affiliate marketing, influencers, content. Then we see the return on every channel. And if there's something that works, then you can shut off what doesn't work and try to ramp that up. And if that still, if it, the performance then declines, then, you know, then it doesn't justify staying alive. So yeah, we test all the channels in different markets to then see the return. But, and then of course, you know, again, countries are very, very different. So in the Western world, we use these markets, these channels we just talked about. But in South Korea, as an example, we used KakaoTalk, which is their, you know, their main social network. In Japan, we tested Line. We do also test local channels. China was a whole different beast because it requires a complete local infrastructure, primarily organized around Tmall and Taobao. So that was a very different list.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of work and a lot of different stuff to figure it out. Did you did this work in-house with your employees, or did you, I don't know, partnered up with local agencies to help you with?
We did it all in-house. I mean, in the very beginning, we didn't hire experts for all the markets. That's obviously expensive. So it was more really more kind of really translations, really. So we hired some students from the different markets and some part-time workers and also a few freelancers, but not many, to do all the content creation. And then from the Hug group, I had a good understanding personally on what to do from a marketing perspective. So I knew which channels to target from the beginning. And then, you know, the whole website setup was also really based on the knowledge from the Hug group in terms of, you know, what payment methods do we use in the different countries, which currency should we apply where, how should the content and the language be organized, how should the customer experience and the UI and the UX be. So that was really because, you know, we've done it before, but just in some very different markets. If we didn't have that knowledge in-house, we would have had to hire external, either agencies or consultancies, which would have been more expensive, of course.
What I often see is, and also after our event, and I'm attending to a lot of international events, and when I talk to other brand owners, I don't know why, but a lot of international brands, for example, when they sell in US and Australia and so on, it's always tough to enter the German market. For us, obviously, I'm living in Munich in Germany. I know how the German people are. But it's so interesting that people in different countries are always different. Like the US people, they are very emotional. You can make promises in your ads. It's always converting well. But in Germany, people are usually very skeptical. You need a lot of proof and like testimonials and so on and guarantees so that those people convert. I have no idea about Asia, how they convert and what they need to see. It's quite interesting for me.
You're exactly right. And Germany was also tough for us in the very the beginning, especially actually all brands in Blazer have had a tough time in Germany. Returns are just, the return rate is just higher compared to other markets. I guess, you know, Zalando has really incorporated a culture there that you can just, you can buy and return everything, right? So that's kind of a need to have now in Germany. Reviews, testimonials, even local reviews. You know, I think we also launched trusted shops within a very short time period. We had local payments from the very beginning, SEPA, so forth. So that's just super important to do in Germany.
Yeah. So what you just mentioned was return policies and so on. When I hop onto another topic, like marketplaces like Amazon, I think those like Amazon in particular, they were growing like crazy during the pandemic. And what you told me in the talk before, in the call before this meeting, that half of the sales worldwide are coming right now from marketplaces. So what is your opinion, or what do you see in the future regarding marketplaces? Do normal Shopify shops or e-commerce brands, can they survive if Amazon keeps growing, or what is your take on this?
It's a good question. I think the 50% that was the social, I think that was the people using social to convert in the beginning. But I did read recently, though, that in the US in particular, 75% of all consumer journeys start on Amazon now. And then that was 2021 data, actually, which is just insane, right? So Amazon is the new Google almost when it comes to products. I think for me, marketplaces are more an opportunity than an enemy. You need to use them. At least for many brands out there. When 75% of the journey start on Amazon in the US, if you're not there, you will with a very high probability miss out, right? If people, they go there as the first interaction point and they search for, I don't know, affordable quality sunglasses, or just black sunglasses. You know, if you're not there, you might already lose out within that first interaction by the consumers. So in my opinion, you know, you have to coexist with them. You should not be fighting them. And they are also becoming better and better at allowing brands to build their brand on the marketplace itself. Historically, you know, a lot of brands were concerned about that, you know, they can't really show off the real identity, the positioning, their edge on a marketplace that's so on marketplace that are so kind of commercially oriented and transactional oriented. But now you are very much allowed to create landing pages, to adjust your product pages, your P2Ps and things like that, which is allowing brands to have a more kind of coherent brand universe across their vertical sites and across marketplaces. I think, you know, I mean, some countries even, you just have to use them. Tmall in China, they own the e-commerce market over there. Having a vertical website almost won't pay off. So some countries are even completely, you know, transitioned into marketplaces being the main sales channel or purchasing channel, whereas in other markets, it's still very fragmented. But I think what we can see now, especially, is that this, especially in Asia, a lot of online consumer trends and behaviors are being consolidated into one place. In China, as an example, you have Tmall, which is their main marketplace online, but you also have WeChat, where you can buy products. But in WeChat, you also have your social media. You also have your daily communication with your friends and family. You also have your payment methods, which is extremely convenient, right? Because everything you use in your life on your phone is in one place. You see this happening more in Korea, I think, with the Kakao Friends also now having payment methods and shopping, and Japan also with their LINE platform. And I think it's just a question of time when things will become more consolidated in Europe and the US also. I mean, Facebook are acquiring heavily, right? And they're sitting on most Western social media platforms now. Facebook, Instagram, also we've recently WhatsApp. So I think very few people know where this is going to be consolidated. But if you look at the Asian trends, there could be a likelihood for this to happen. And how marketplace will be integrated to that is a good question. You know, I can't answer that. But I think fighting marketplaces, in my humble opinion, is a tough battle. One should more embrace them and use them in a way that's beneficial to the brand.
Yeah, I totally share your thought about this. I mean, at the end, when I look at Amazon right now, it's pull marketing, right? People look for sunglasses. People look for other products. At the end, if you want to build your brand, you also need another channel, or maybe in the future, it's even on Amazon itself, but you need some sort of like building the brand awareness, right? And what I also saw with Facebook and Instagram, that they do like their local, their native checkouts, so you can purchase with the platform itself. This could be also like a battle between giants like Facebook and Amazon. But I'm totally with you. People trust simply Amazon, and you can purchase with one click or one swipe, actually. It's so convenient for the people, and convenience always wins. So
convenience is key. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely,
and that's why consolidating everything into one system is just that's kind of the extreme of convenience. But I mean, I would love that personally. You know, as a consumer, you know, it's a very very nice journey.
I mean, when I think about like infomercials from the television, like live shopping, and then you can call them and order. Actually, when I think about the future, and I think in the US, they already launched it on Amazon, if I'm not wrong. I'm not an Amazon expert, though. But if you compare, if you combine like the live event or the live, this live thing on Amazon, and then directly you can purchase with one click, for example, that would be insane. And then those events you could like advertise on Amazon with, I don't know, like video ads or something. Yeah, I'm curious
that already you see very much in Asia already, right? Which has been a big thing in the last couple of years, live streaming and live shopping, now coming to Europe more and more. But that's the thing, right? We talk so much about personalization. Everything has to be, you know, customized exactly to each and every consumer out there, in terms of how's the website visualized, what's the communication, what's the imagery, what's the pricing with dynamic pricing. But the easiest way to personalize is to talk to a person who can guide you, right? That's the most human way of doing it. And I mean, we're also doing that now as an example with our watch brand Nordgreen. On the page, we have a little floating widget in the lower right corner where you can have a live chat with our, not just a live chat, but a video chat, a live session with our customer service team. Then you sit face to face and you get kind of, you get suggestions for what to buy, you know, what combinations are good from a watch and strap perspective. And that's just personalization through human interaction. It's old school, but it does work.
Yeah, I mean, it works amazing in offline retail, right? You go into a shop, a person is coming to you, asking you questions, helping you out. And at the end, you purchase like twice what you actually wanted to purchase. Just happened to me last weekend because of great engagement with this person. I cannot imagine the like on scale. Like you, I bet you would need like hundreds, like an army of like people doing the videos, chats, and so on. But you can use it as upsells as well. Like it's crazy. Did you already launch it? Does it work?
Yeah, we launched it. It's live, so you can go in and when the employees are in the office, you can order a booking right away. Otherwise, you can schedule at a certain date, and then they'll be available to you.
Nice. I'm gonna try it out for sure.
And that's the one-to-one customer experience. Then you can also do the one-to-many, where you can have many people participating in one session. And you know, you see some platforms that are really doing this at scale now. Bambooza in Sweden is a good example, which a lot of big e-commerce companies now using, where they also invite influencers in, as an example, to do live sessions with both their audience and the brand's audience, and it does really work well for many.
Amazing. I think, or I bet even virtual reality could be the next, I don't know, like the next, the next thing after this Zoom call. I mean, did you ever try this out, virtual reality selling products, AR?
Not yet. I mean, you have a lot of brands now using augmented reality, right? Where you can take your phone and kind of, scan your wrist and have a watch on your wrist, or especially with sunglasses where you can see how the sunglasses look in your face. We haven't explored that too much. I think it's also still very early days technology-wise. But I think virtual reality, there will definitely be some big e-commerce and marketing opportunities in the future. I read recently that 20% of all Facebook's employees are working on virtual reality, which is something that I didn't know, and I was quite surprised to read. So, I mean, as an example, they're working on building this, what did they call it? I think they call it Meta Universe.
Oculus. Ah, okay.
Yeah, they acquired Oculus and then they acquired others, but I think they're, at least how I understand it, is that their vision is to create social media that's interactive in the future. So instead of you and I sitting here looking at each other on the screen, or you and I chatting on Messenger, we'll be wearing our goggles and be in the same room, which is super cool. I mean, I would love to sit in a virtual room with four friends, and you know, you can, you know, transform yourself into a Pokemon or whatever, and you just sit in there. but I think marketing in there, if this becomes a reality and actually it's going to scale, I think there'll be some insanely cool marketing opportunities.
Actually, I tried Oculus in Greece on a mastermind in August, and I was so surprised how it felt so real. I mean, your brain thinks it's actually real, and it's actually, when you think about it in a e-commerce environment, it's like you go into a shop like offline into the retail, and there's a person is helping you what to choose as a product. I think it will be insane if it's coming in the near future. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think so too. I mean, again, if Facebook are applying 1/5 of their workforce to do this, yeah, there must be a big reason for it.
Absolutely. I wanna run Facebook ads on those on those Oculus.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that would be cool.
All right. Other than that, do you have anything else? Have anything else in mind regarding future trends and how it will change in the e-commerce space in the next years?
No, I think it's a tough question, right? Nobody really knows what's going to happen in the future. But I think our discussion here covered some points that could become very relevant. I think for marketing wise, companies will just have to go broader channel from a channel perspective. it's important that companies going forward will own more customer data themselves, especially now with iOS 14 and probably more things happening going forward that's going to hinder targeting for many brands. So I think owning data will become more important than ever. Consolidations we talked about from a commercial e-com perspective into social media could also become a very big thing. I mean, beyond we talked about not really much. I think internationalization will become much bigger. Mm-hmm. Even when I talk to a lot of brands in Denmark, you know, a lot of people still apply this Uppsala approach, the Uppsala model approach to their way of internationalizing. They start in their home market, as an example in Germany, and then they go to Austria and then Switzerland, and then they are very exotic by going into Italy and France, right? Whereas I think a lot of brands in the future will turn the whole model around and say, you know, we don't care about proximity. Let's look at, well, A, which markets are most interesting when it comes to the product we have created. Whereas do we have the best product market fit? And maybe that's 10,000 kilometers away, which is not a problem. Two, where can I actually afford building my business? You know, you might have, because of unit economics, you might not be able to have a too high cost of sale. And if one of your core markets have super high prices marketing-wise, then you might have to reject those in the very beginning and choose others with lower marketing prices where you also still have good product market fit, because you can then expect to be able to scale more. As you said, branding will become more important than ever on an international scale. You need to think about consumers internationally and how to adjust your brand to different markets. You know, if you are a nutrition company, right? If suddenly the Middle East is open to you, how do you make your products halal, as an example, right? Milk products are not used in certain countries. How can you avoid that? I mean, just examples, right? So I think this whole international focus will become much bigger. And Shopify, as an example, really allows brands to go global also through having a lot of local shopping methods available. So, I mean, I think there's something we'll see much more going forward, where the whole model of internationalizing will be turned upside down.
So, Vasily, thank you so much for your time. Next time I visit you in Denmark, and then we drink a beer, or I don't know what you drink there, but I want to meet you again.
Yeah, for sure. It was a pleasure in Spain, and I look forward to seeing you here in Denmark or in Germany. We'll see.
All right. Have a great day.
Cool. You too. Thank you. See you, Daniel. Bye-bye.
Wir hoffen, dass dir diese Folge wieder gefallen hat. Wenn du auch endlich konstant und profitabel 6- bis 7-stellige Umsätze mit deinem Online-Shop erreichen möchtest, dann gehe jetzt auf ecomsecrets.de und buche eine kostenlose Strategiesession. In diesem 45-minütigen Gespräch zeigen wir dir ganz genau, welche Schritte du umsetzen musst, um profitabel skalieren zu können. Es sind immer die gleichen 5 Elemente, die du meistern musst, um deinen Online-Shop erfolgreich zu machen. Du willst wissen, welche das sind? Gehe jetzt auf ecomsecrets.de und finde es heraus.